Just to get everyone's interest piqued and perplexed, today, according to the market, one Bitcoin equals $70,201.14 Canadian. What's a Bitcoin? Why is it worth so much? And how do you make one? And why does it take so much power to do so? Bitcoin is a digital currency created quite mysteriously in January 2009. It offers the promise of lower transaction fees than traditional online payment mechanisms, and unlike government-issued currencies, it is operated by a decentralized authority. The definitively 21st century legal tender has attracted the attention and concern of Nelson City Councillor Keith Page, among others, and he's here to show us the money. Good morning, Keith.
Good morning.
So why is the Bitcoin such an ongoing concern in financial markets?
I would say in the financial markets, the speculation part of it is they're in a gold rush. We've got a new system of currency in terms of blockchain, or at least a new opportunity for people to invest in and speculate in, and it's obviously seen quite the amount of growth, especially during COVID. And so I don't come from the financial sector, and I don't speak for what that industry is talking about, but I know there's lots of talk of trying to overthrow the fiat currency, which is our normal day-to-day currency. But there's also just a lot of hype and pumping as people try and, you know, extend their investments. People have been really jazzed about Bitcoin and the real innovation underneath the blockchain for a long time.
And so then also, why has it attracted the local attention and some gentle alarm here on City Council? Why is it a concern to our local power grid? And you've referred to the world of unintended consequences.
Yeah, no, I think that's important. I wouldn't say we have alarm, but I would say that City Council, as the governing body for the land that is the city and what goes on inside of it, has very specific goals and aspirations for what it as an organization is trying to accomplish. And that really comes from the official community plan. I know that's kind of a little bit of a dry conversation, but one of the big things we've done in the last year here and leading up with this council is the adoption of the Nelson Next document and plan for our low carbon economy and our low carbon resilience as a community. And so we have a couple things that are prohibited within the city, and one of those now is industrial scale computing. One of the other ones is also living in RVs is prohibited in the city, and you're not allowed to have a cannabis operation, actually.
So, Keith, go ahead. Oh, go ahead.
Well, and I was just going to say, like, the OCP really envisions the city as a lively, vibrant place where people are coming and going from buildings all the time, where there's dense living environments in the residential area and vibrant commercial districts. And so you'll see in that report that a big reason for banning or prohibiting industrial scale computing is that those buildings and uses, we're land poor. Like, this is a small area. Mm-hmm. And so what we want is as a human-centric or a people-centric community for most of those buildings.
So back to the Bitcoin front, and thanks for the bigger picture explanation. Council has decided to address Bitcoin and industrial scale computing in a couple of ways. But first, what exactly is industrial scale computing?
So the definition we adopted was, and this is really hinges on power. Like, it's easy to think, oh, we've banned Bitcoin or we're against NFTs, and there's probably some arguments to be made there. But as council and as the city, we're against units being used that consume more than 9 to 13 houses worth of power. So if you're going to start an operation that's going to consume the same power as an entire city block, then we want to know about it. Because the other thing about a prohibition, and we see it all the time, if anyone sits down at the council meetings and observes them and sees the people coming up for variances to have their deck a little wider or their shed built a little closer to their neighbors or their fence to go a bit higher because of an inclination on the lot. If anybody wanted to come and set up an operation that fit the definition of industrial scale computing, they could come to council and ask for a variance. And I think that strikes a really strong middle ground that if you have a good project, if you can deal with it, you can bring it forward to council. If you have a project, if there's a Bitcoin or a blockchain technology or non-fungible asset technology that comes out that isn't power intensive, go ahead, fill your boots. Like, that's not going to hit the definition. It's when you start to get into I'm consuming the same power as the rest of my rest of the buildings on my block.
So what would
that's when this kicks in?
So what would be an example of a low power blockchain? Something that someone might do for what can people can and can't do from a blockchain perspective?
Well, blockchain is a decentralized database first and foremost. Like that's the innovation there. Like there is a real mathematical problem that was finally solved. It's a long-standing one. It's called the Byzantine generals problem, and I probably will not do it justice explaining it, so I'm not going to try. But
yeah.
essentially it just simply means how do you get a group of people to trust that a message they're passing between each other hasn't been altered by someone with motivations to do so. And in money markets, that
doesn't
exist. So it's about us. When it comes to blockchain, it's about everybody who's participating in the system having the full ledger and having signed keys to be able to quantify that when they're passing changes, those changes are legitimate and that everybody else has them, essentially. So it takes the central authority out of it. So typically when we try and do these systems, we usually have to have someone we trust, either it's a bookkeeper or a bank manager or in the case of the Commonwealth, the Crown, right? All the power kind of flows down from her in some way over some time, over some tradition. So it's really taking that trusted authority out and saying, you know what, actually we can accomplish the same thing, but we don't have to have someone that we're passing the signing stick to.
We're speaking with Councillor Keith Page with some insight into Bitcoin and why Nelson City Council wants to keep a bit of a lid on the Bitcoin bank. Keith, have you ever bought or traded in Bitcoin?
Hilariously enough, I have not, but I have probably been called in a pretty countless amount of times over the years to help other people do it. Like, I've done it as tech support.
Right. Oh, right.
I see the people who do, little grandmothers and young mothers and ambitious people between work. And I'm not to slag anything, but it's just like, I've done it for tech support. I've been pulled in a couple times to help people set up Bitcoin wallets, that help people get onto trading markets, all that kind of stuff. People who wanted to start to dabble, and hopefully some of those people have actually gotten quite rich off of it in the meantime. But I've done it for people, but not for myself.
Well, it's 70,000 now, and it was there was a time you could get it for pennies on the dollar back 11
totally.
Years ago or something like that.
There's some guy kicking himself over a pizza.
Oh, that's right. That's one of the legend, maybe it's not an urban legend about the guy who played for a pizza with one Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Another one of the legends is the mystery behind the tender. No one's quite sure who is the real person or person behind the event. Can you shed any light on that?
No.
Okay.
No.
We're running short of time anyways.
That's the thing is we don't, people talk about this like they're freeing themselves off from the shackles of government or any other, any perceived power of control, but like there's still human organizations that form around these things that deal with protocols and what fair ways of exchanging data are. Like Bitcoin protocol itself has been modified a few times, not to no small amount of protest from the user groups. And it's still, at the end of the day, we still have to have this conversation about what the social value of these things are and what they're actually providing for our community. And when we say we're going to have a decentralized system that's maybe run by more of a, we don't know who wrote the paper. It may be inconsequential. The person might be dead at this point. But we still have this group. We still have groups of people that form in societies that control and manage these protocols. We found out, a couple of years ago that one of the major cryptography protocols that have been used by computer systems for decades had been the entire time, or for most of the entire time, infiltrated by the CIA. And they were feeding changes into the protocol specifically so they could have back doors. And no, it took 20 years for anyone to notice, but it was the bastion of open source, open public record decision making, but it was still, at the end of the day, compromised to the detriment of everybody else who was actually using it.
Oh, geez. Hang on. I got to put my tinfoil hat on here. Hang on a sec.
I
That is really something. Now we got a story. CIA, incredible. Keith, always great to talk to you. Just wanted to ask you super quick before we go. Do we have one more time for one more question?
Yeah.
Wanted to ask you quickly about this the survey on the damage and hopefully repair to the arts and culture scene in town. $30,000 is going to be spent having a look at where folks in the cultural scene are at after the pandemic. It's been very difficult on them. Can you shed any light onto when that's going to start and what we're going to do with the results?
You know, I didn't get a chance to. I'm gonna tie it back up to the non-fungible tokens. On the survey side, I think this is about appropriate decision making capacity. So one of the things that we identified early on with COVID, going back almost a year now, was an economic development in general and economic resilience. These plans were adopted. If you go back. Because of the risk of wildfire. So we put in place, adopted a plan that was basically a framework for what to do in a disaster. And that came, we were really lucky that we had done that work ahead of time because we were able to activate it during COVID. And one of the things it really highlighted was to tap into and access the partnership groups that we have, like to make sure that council wasn't trying to be all things to all people. But rather that we were setting up structures and institutional power to support the different endeavors we wanted to do. And one of those is economic development. So we have the NAADP, which is a partnership between Area E, Area F, and the city. And so when we think about economic questions, we try to do that at that table. We try to empower that table to make decisions on what the priorities in those areas need to be. One of those decisions that was coming out was definitely arts and culture, and specifically an economic impact study in terms of what economic. It's really hard at times to support parts of the sector where you don't have hard data as to what they're contributing to your economy.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Sometimes easy to just say, "Well, they'll be fine. It's just dancing. It's just musicians. You know, they'll bounce back." But there was a study done back in 2003 that really highlighted the importance of the knock-on effect of that industry, what it did for our community, and that study is old in the tooth now, or long in the tooth, mm-hmm. and the NAADP was like the nerdy economists over there, and with all the rural participation and the diverse mindsets were like, you know, we really need this report updated. So council wrestled with that a little bit, but fundamentally at the end, at our last meeting, we finally passed it. It wasn't there for too long, but it was there for a bit, and set off the RDI in Selkirk to go collect the first part of that data. And the goal is to get to a point when we're through the end of summer, when we start to need to open up and target some of our other investments and how we're going to try and bounce back as quickly as possible.
Okay,
is to have that data there to know who's been hit the hardest and what their impact has been on our economy and on their sector, so that we can hopefully figure out quickly what we need to be doing, what the low hanging fruit is, and not try and reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, it's been a heck of a tough time for a lot of folks, especially the arts and culture people. So great appreciation, no doubt, from them for you jumping on this and seeing how you can help. That's Councillor Keith Page with some insight into Bitcoin and why Nelson City Council wants to keep a bit of a lid on the bank, and some insight into the arts and culture survey that is forthcoming. Thanks a bunch, Keith.
Thanks, Keith.
You're welcome. Can I end with one word?
One word.
Okay.
One word.
Can you? That's a
you
good
know,
question.
One of the things, there is a real opportunity for the city of Nelson. So anyone who's listening, or even the area, you know, the blockchain, Bitcoin, non-fungible token really needs an innovation in a system that isn't actually as power consumptive. The power consumption piece of it is actually a manufactured problem in order to solve a different problem. So there is huge opportunity for us and for the world for someone to come forward and say, you know what, we have an alternative system. We have a way of doing this work in a way that doesn't consume this amount of power, that uses some other element of our natural world to track and do that security piece. And so that's the challenge to this community, right? Like, that's the thing to do, is figure out how to do all the stuff you're already doing, but don't burn the power that's being burned to do it.
It's a good challenge, yeah.
Yeah, good challenge. Thanks a lot, Keith.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.